Dr. Jeanette Gastat has her PhD and an MPH. She is a clinical associate professor of epidemiology at Tulane University School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine. She is the lead investigator of the core research project at the Prevention Research Center at Tulane and principal investigator of the Tulane Collaborating Center of the National Physical Activity and Policy Research Network. Her research interests include environmental determinants of physical activity and obesity, including food access.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you for sticking with me to the last session on what's been a long day. Wanted to talk, relationships I'm going to tell you about, right? No, nothing to disclose. Sorry. So the background for this research, supermarkets offer more shelf space devoted to fresh fruits and vegetables compared to convenience stores. And in the literature, as the first presenter pointed out, that there may be some conflicting research, but some of the research has shown that proximity to supermarkets may be important to a healthy diet. And New Orleans is known as underserved in terms of number of supermarkets. We have a lot of food access issues. And because of these food access issues and what's happened after Hurricane Katrina, when there was so much community involvement in planning and rethinking access to food as well as redesigning our environment, the Prevention Research Center was instrumental in putting together a food policy advisory committee to influence or to inform the city council on how we moved forward in restructuring food access. And this policy advisory council was made of academics, of local food providers, of like people like Second Harvest and food pantry groups, as well as people who finance these types of things. And this group came up with a series of 10 recommendations that was reported to City Council. And the recommendation that was taken up by them was to do a fresh food retailer initiative, working with the Food Trust from Philadelphia and modeled similarly after the national initiative. And it was signed in 2011 and funded with $14 million in financing, $7 million from government funding and matched by local funders for another $7 million. So we knew that there were changes to the food environment were going to happen, and this led us to anticipate that and to get into do some baseline research. We did citywide survey, and we did some neighborhood survey, and I'm going to talk to you today about the neighborhood survey. Again, being a part of the Food Policy Advisory Committee and involved with the FFRI that was going on in the city, we had our ears to the ground to where stores were going to open, who was developing what project, and where that was going to open. And so we knew that a store was going to open in a certain area and went in that neighborhood and found a comparison neighborhood to do surveys to look at where people shopped, what they consumed, how often they shopped, excuse me, and those related issues. So we wanted to examine what factors were associated with consuming a fresh produce, with any produce at all, and with junk food, keeping in mind that we knew there were food access issues, and we wanted to know how this affected people's diets. Excuse me, I'm going to need a drink. Because our prevention, Our study is funded by the Prevention Research Center. We're one of the CDC's centers, and at that time had a strong influence to working with communities and doing community-based participatory research. So we have a community advisory board, and for every project we do, we have a steering committee. And this was no different. We had a steering committee made up of local organizations and residents that guided our project. We went in with an in-person household interview in the fall of October 2012 and the spring of 2013. We trained staff to conduct these in-person household interviews. We did two neighborhoods, as I mentioned, the Broad Street or Mid-City neighborhood. I'll show you a map in a second where we knew a store was going to go in. And then a comparison neighborhood that was called Bunny Friend because that's the name of the park. It's also known as the Upper Ninth Ward. We went in wanting to talk to the main household shopper in each of these homes because that was the person who was going to be doing the grocery shopping and often sort of directing what was eaten in that household. We completed 901 interviews between the two neighborhoods and had a response rate of 65%. These are our two neighborhoods, and the Broad Street neighborhood, darker, identified with the darker square, is where the store opened, and it opened this past fall as part of the refresh project. The green dots indicate the supermarkets, and in each of these neighborhoods, there was no supermarket, and actually over a mile from most of the residents to the nearest supermarket. Because this study was about accessing food and going grocery shopping, we named this project the Making Groceries Project, and that's a colloquial expression for going grocery shopping. And this really resonated with folks. We put this on our t-shirts. We had reusable bags that we gave as incentives for participating in the interviews, and so was our brand, if you will, Making Groceries. What we assessed where respondents shopped, where they purchased food, how many trips they made, how they got there, and what eating habits that they had. We looked at a modified food frequency, looking at servings of fresh, canned, and frozen vegetables and fruits, salty snacks, candies, pastries, sweet baked goods, and sodas, regular and diet, as well as fast food. So we were able to look at daily servings of fresh food as well as, produce, as well as any produce, as well as the daily frequency or times of consumption of junk food, both with and without soda. And I'm going to be talking about junk food, using the term to mean the following there, the candy, the chips, salty snacks, pastries, etc. We collected basic demographic information, self-reported weight and height so we could calculate BMI, a household size, whether they owned or had access to a car. Our steering committee suggests that we asked who cooked at home or who cooked from scratch, and you'll see that this has important implications. But we hadn't thought of that, so we were really appreciative of asking that question. We calculated average distance to the store that the people had, and we looked at the different types of stores where people shopped, including the full-service grocery store, a corner store, a convenience store, and farmers markets. We looked at means and frequencies for our variables. We calculated the average distance to the store using GIS. Many people shopped at many different stores, and so we took an average of the distance where they shopped. The consumption variables were not normally distributed, so we looked at the bottom quartile of fresh and any produce versus other categories, and then the top quartile of junk food with and without soda versus the other categories. Then we used multiple logistic regression factors, looking at four different outcomes: fresh produce, any produce, and junk food with and without soda. And this just shows the distribution of the variables, and I'll explain the cutoffs where we used, but you can see they're not normally distributed. And so the bottom quartile indicated one or fewer servings of fresh fruit and vegetables, and the medians are reported there. The bottom quartile of any fruit and vegetable, so this would include canned and frozen as well, was a little higher, was equal or less than 1.7 servings per day. The top quartile of times per day of junk food consumption was greater than four or more times a day. And then without soda was 2.5 times a day or more. So these were our results, our respondent characteristics. Not surprisingly, we were dealing with women. The neighborhoods were primarily African American, 79% in one neighborhood and 90-some percent in the other neighborhood, and tended to be somewhat older than the average population. And again, not surprising, we asked to speak to the main household shopper, and that's often the older woman in the household. We looked at times cooking at home, and you can see that's quite low, less than one time a day for the median people are cooking at home. And the household size there, around 2. 28% shopped at a farmer's market in the past 3 months. The average distance to the store was 4.5 kilometers. People made six on average trips per month to the grocery store, a little over one trip per month to the corner store, and nearly two trips per month to the convenience store. Corner stores are the sort of the mom-and-pop shops in the neighborhoods on the corners, and convenience stores were more often associated with gas stations or 7-Eleven types of stores. Generally, we had a low-educated population, with nearly 80% having less than a high school education. Household income was quite low, with the highest frequency here being less than $10,000 a year. Half the group was on food assistance. Most everybody owned or had access to a car. So this is our first outcome, looking at factors associated with fresh fruit and vegetable consumption. This shows the bivariate and the multivariable analyses. It shows that education, access to a car, distance to the grocery store, as well as frequency of time shopping were related to the bivariately associated with fresh fruit and vegetable consumption. However, once the other variables in the model were controlled for, we see the importance of owning or access to a car was related to an increased consumption of fruits and vegetables. And frequency of shopping is also more important to a grocery store or farmer's market, with increased frequency of shopping times related to increased consumption of produce. However, this opposite was seen for frequency of shopping at a corner store. And times cooking at home was related to an increase in consumption of fresh fruits and vegetables. Now, when we look at any fruit and vegetable consumption, we see males are less likely to have any fruit or vegetable consumption once the other variables are included in the model. However, frequency of shopping to a grocery store is important, as well as daily times cooking at home. When we look at factors associated with junk food with soda, we see an inverse association with age, and an increase, a direct association with being African American, and trips, frequency of trips to the grocery store. So the more trips you make, the more likely you are to the convenience store, the more likely you are to consume junk food with soda. Now, looking at just junk food without soda, we see an inverse association with age and a direct association with being African American, having a lower education, and with an increased frequency of shopping trips to the convenience store. So in summary, we found that distance was not important once frequency of shopping was in the model. And so this sort of adds to the debate that is sort of brewing in the access and placement of grocery stores and how we remediate food deserts. Shopping at a farmer's market was associated with increased consumption of produce, and cooking at home was associated with an increased consumption of produce. And shopping at convenience stores is related to an increased association with junk food. Probably not surprising there. So frequency of trips may be more important than car access and proximity. So this may be something to consider for supermarkets as they are considering siting policies and programs that might increase access. Promoting strategies to help families cook at home would be a good way to focus on getting consumption or increased consumption of produce, as well as promoting shopping at farmers markets. And because this was done as a baseline study, it's going to be important to follow this up, and we are currently looking for funding to do that. So this is a unique opportunity. Everyone agreed to be assessed at a future time, and so we're looking forward to going back to these individuals to see, now that the store has opened in this area, how does that influence their shopping and their frequency of shopping and their consumption. And that's what I have. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
very interesting. We did not assess that, and I think that's maybe something we need to consider. And going forward, and certainly at the follow-up of this, we can address questions like that. But if it's related to car access and these, maybe it's related to food preparation, it seems like the car access and doesn't seem to be as much of a factor. Whether even if they didn't have a car, people were still able to get to the store. What really mattered, it seemed, was how often people went to the store. And I don't know if that's related to discretionary time. We need to collect that to be able to look at that. But thank you. Yeah. Yes. We did look at that, and I only showed the variables that were associated, so that fell out of the model. So we did have about half of the population who were on the SNAP benefits, and that's what we call them here, but that was not associated. So, yeah, isn't that interesting? I'll address your second one. Maybe that's a little easier. We weren't sure what to do with the soda. Soda seems to be so prevalent, whether you have junk food or not, people are drinking soda. We didn't know if that was part of the picture of describing someone who had higher consumption of junk food or not. So it's because we really didn't know what to do with that we looked at it both ways. The sampling question is a little more complicated to explain, but we did an assessment of the housing units in the neighborhood, and we did a systematic sampling to get a representation of the different geographic radii in the neighborhoods, if you will, starting with a central point and trying to get, we knew where the store was going to go in, so looking at representation within like a quarter mile, a half mile, and a little further out from that store, trying to get a distribution between those different geographies, both in the intervention neighborhood where the store was going in and then in the comparison neighborhood. There is no store, and we just use the park, the Bunny Friend Park, that's there as our central, as our centroid. Not 2 miles. It was about a mile and some. Trying to go on census blocks, it's not even, but yeah. So that was the complicated part to figure out in the beginning, but we tried to be representative of that area. In the back. Well, that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. Yes, we've presented the results to our steering committee, and they helped us figure out that, yes, it is possible for some individuals to go as many times as they did to the corner store. When we saw those results, we thought some of those numbers were outliers, and they helped us sort of put perspective on what was possible and not. So they've been with us as we've been interpreting this data. We have made some general presentations to the neighborhood and to some of the community groups. These exact results have not been presented yet, so we're going to work on that. We've done some sort of general descriptive presentations to our community members at whole. Thank you. We did ask about if the number, we asked if they had children and the number of household size. And we did not, we looked at household size and that did not play a factor in the models. I don't think we looked specifically at the presence of children in these households. So that's something to further explore, although household size didn't seem to matter. There is something that did come up that we haven't yet explored, and this is another thing that our steering committee suggested. They suggested that we ask if people are shopping for people outside the household. And we did not think to ask that, and it turns out people are overwhelmingly shopping for people not part of their household. And so I don't know how that affects you know, what you eat if someone else is shopping and buying for you, and then how that, you know, affects your purchases. So there's another aspect to that that we still need to explore.